Good afternoon. My name is Erin Bush from Kansas State University. I'm a junior in agronomy. This past summer, I completed a lab calibration study of a water content reflectometer for the purpose of receiving accurate readings in field use. It is important to measure accurate soil moisture contents of a given soil when making decisions regarding cropping systems to determine crop water use. This knowledge will help develop management decisions such as irrigation scheduling, cover crop use, and water balance. The results of my calibration study will be directly applied to the Kansas Agricultural Watershed Research Site at Kansas State University, which is where I received my soil. Here, we are analyzing different treatments with cover crops to determine water runoff quantity and quality, specifically phosphorus. My water content reflectometer is used permittivity to estimate the volumetric water content. The measurements are directly affected by differences in soil texture, salinity changes, and changes in bulk density. My objective for the study was to determine if the Campbell Scientific C655 water content reflectometers require soil-specific calibrations prior to field use. To meet this objective, I completed a lab calibration study to compare my known volumetric water content that I calculated in the lab compared to the Campbell Scientific 655 water content. To do this, I prepared the soil first in the greenhouse by letting it air dry, and then I grinded it through a 2-millimeter sieve to make sure that everything was consistent. The next step was the wetting process, in which I spread my soil out on a tarp, as you can see on the bottom picture. And I wetted it using a dilute calcium sulfate solution. I then calculated the gravimetric water content in the lab to determine where I stood on my water content before proceeding on to the next step. The next step was the soil packing. I had 4 20.3 centimeter high PVC columns in which I packed my soil in 6 different layers, each at 3 centimeters in width. I packed it to a target bulk density at 1.25 grams per centimeter cubed to make sure that everything was consistent throughout the column. The porosity that I achieved was about 53%. I used 8 different water contents over a wide spectrum between dry and wet. The 40% water content that I achieved, I proceeded with a pipetting process, as you can see in the right-hand column, to achieve the accurate water content. To take readings, I placed 1 probe per column that were hooked up at a data logger in my computer. Each probe estimates volumetric water content, bulk soil, electrical conductivity, degrees Celsius, and permittivity. The permittivity is the amount of energy that can be stored in an electrical field. Probes use the permittivity, like I said, to estimate the volumetric water content. So as you can see in the last one, in the picture, I put the jars around them. They're all filled with water to check that the permittivity was not changing and so that my soil and the probes were not reading anything that was going on in the atmosphere, and everything that my probes were reading were accurate with what was happening in the soil. As you can see on the left graph, that is the driest volumetric water content that I took readings in. And the black line indicates where the CS655 probe was reading at, that was my known water content, and the bar graphs reached where my water content was reading at, and they were under predicting the water content. And then on the right graph is my wettest soil content that I could achieve, in which each probe over predicted by about 6%. So this tells me that the probes need calibration or a correction to improve the accuracy of their readings. So I took 3 different calibration correction pathways. The first was a linear correction, in which I provided a linear graph that showed the volumetric water content that was read by the CS655 and then my known. The second one was a permittivity calibration in which I plotted the permittivity versus the known volumetric water content as a quadratic function. And then the third one was the known volumetric water content versus the square root permittivity, and that was provided by the manual of the CX65 probe. My linear correction was one of the best correction pathways that I had. I used multiple linear regression analysis originally to find differences between each probe, but then I found out that each probe was very similar to each other, and then I just corrected it to a single linear correction. The second one, with a permittivity versus the known volumetric water content, the blue line represents the top equation that was given in the manual, and it works as a four-parameter equation that is a cubed function. And so I actually had to use a quadratic function because I didn't have enough water content at the higher water content level to make it my line fit the top equation, and we found out that the quadratic function fit better. The third calibration that I did was the square root permittivity versus the known, and this was one of the best ones that I found to achieve. And this one was the one that was provided by the CX55 manual, in which they suggested last, but now I suggest that first. I completed a statistical analysis of each calibration to compare the accuracy of each one so that I knew which one would be the best for field use. I found out that the top equation that they provided in the manual was actually the worst. The linear correction that I compared was one of the best, but then as you can see, the square root permittivity had the least common error compared to especially the permittivity calibration versus the known volumetric water content. I have concluded that there is no significant difference between the probes, and I found that for accuracy between an underprediction of 4% on a dry soil and 6% on a wet soil, calibration or a correction is definitely necessary. For future research, I would suggest that you evaluate the effects of the properties of soil instead of what I did when I went through and manipulated each water content. It is definitely important to see the changes that the probes will read between the salinity, the texture differences, and bulk density differences to see if they're consistent and read the same or read different so that you can achieve even more accuracy when you're trying to receive your soil moisture levels. I would like to take a moment to acknowledge my sponsors in this project. And are there any questions? Yes.
Why do you use the calcium sulfate?
I use the calcium sulfate instead of water to encourage the soil not to bundle up on me. Calcium is actually a flocculant instead of a dispersing agent, but if I use the calcium sulfate solution when I am mixing and wetting, then it actually helps it to stay uniform. Yes?
I'm not familiar with a reflectometer. Can you give me a little summary how that works?
Yeah, so a reflectometer is a kind of soil moisture probe. You put it in the soil vertically, and it sends out neutrons into the soil, and it receives things, and it bounces it back. And so it uses the permittivity with the electrical field to measure the volumetric water content with the different parameters of bulk density and bulk EC.
What's the source of your neutrons?
Yes.
What's the source of your neutrons?
The probes were all connected to a computer and a data logger, and so they had the energy from the data logger and a battery source to send out an electrical field. Yeah.
And another question. So you showed the root mean square error. I was just wondering how you calculated that.
My professor and I did a statistical analysis on a computer program to find the common error.
What was that program?
I am unsure at this moment.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let's just give one more round of applause to all those that presented today and also all the judges that have, you know, taken their time out to come here and listen to all these presentations. Judges, you may now be adjourned so that way you can finish calibrating your results. And when y'all are done, y'all can come back and we can announce the winner. Yeah, I think so. Because y'all aren't supposed to be here for the other 15-minute question and answer part. I'm sorry. Okay. Now, for those that still presented that are still here, if you want to kind of come up to the front, and those that had questions that were that want to ask about your presentations, then you can do that at this moment.
Is that a commercially available probe, like huge?
Yeah, it's provided by Campbell Scientific, and they have all kinds of different products on their website.
So it is actually truly a little miniature neutron probe. I think of a big neutron probe.
It's about this big in length. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question for you as well.
Yeah.
So that probe, it looks wider than the other probes that I've seen. So are there metal probes that go into the soil?
Yes.
All I've looked at, or all we saw, was the top part. So we're just looking at the top, and then what does the rest of it look like?
So it had that white section at the top, and then inside of it, it was holding the two metal probes that went down into the soil at, I think it was 10 centimeters deep. So I had to provide a column that was larger than other calibration studies because my probe was larger than normal. And I also had to go farther down to suit the length of the probes.
Any other questions for any of the other presenters?
Maybe they can restate the topic.
Do what?
Maybe they can restate what they
showed. Yeah, if you want to kind of go back through and maybe restate what your topic was about, and maybe those that were here could generate maybe another question that they had.
I looked at total carbon and carbon flux of post-mining reclamation. I don't know if anyone would be interested in that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Good. We got one person. Any questions?
I thought your
presentation
was good.
Perfect. That's a great question.
I did arsenic and selenium in soil and wine. I did composting for coffee farms in Northern Canada.
I did a comparison between charcoal hard soils and non-charcoal hard soils.
I have created relationships of bigger and scanty diagnosis and relationships.
And I did line rolling and corn.
Yeah.
A question for the inspector in the last presenter. I'm sorry, I forgot your name. No, Miss Kansas.
Oh, me?
Jordan. Huh, Jordan?
Yeah.
Is it more Moyer? Which one?
Masters.
Masters. Jordan Masters. Yeah, so it looked like in the end you had. You were saying a lot of the soil quality parameters started to even out. Mm-hmm. It looked like there were pretty big differences in yields still. Is that correct?
The yields were still a little bit of an increase. So in 2011,
to. In 2014, it was only about 75%, so it was starting to go down.
But it was still a significant yield increase, right?
Yeah.
Do you know, can you attribute that yield increase to, I don't know, from 19 up to 31 or something like that? What soil properties do you attribute that yield increase to, if you feel that the soil quality parameters are more even?
Well, the only one that I would say that was really different between the minimum and the maximum was probably the organic matter. There was still a pretty big difference between the 0 and the 18 on the organic matter. So, and the same with the phosphorus. The phosphorus in the soil was definitely higher in the 18 than it was in the 0. But we were starting to see that equal out, and that's what I kind of attribute that more to. The equaling out of the yield was probably the equaling out of most of the phosphorus.
So, I guess in the follow-up, if you should you fertilize this campus with more phosphorus or other nutrients to build the yield, or
yeah, that's a really good question. You could, I mean, definitely you get the same across the board. But what we were looking at more was would you not have to fertilize it to get the same results? And what we were seeing was that in 2011 with the phosphorus, 0 to 18, there was a really big gap between the amount. Now in 2015, it had come down, and we saw that the phosphorus had came down in the 9 to 18, but in the 0, 2.2, and 4.5, it had came down very little, so we're contributing that mainly to luxury effect.
So are you suggesting that you, you should or should not fertilize them?
I mean, this was more of like, is it sustainable without fertilizing it? I mean, if you were going to do this commercially, yeah, fertilizing would probably help boost yields.
So do you think it's sustainable without fertilizing it?
Our results are starting to show that, yeah, but we are still only 5 years into its production cycle. It has a 15 average year production cycle, so it's about waiting to figure out how long it can be sustainable.
I have a question for the wine.
Yeah.
I still wasn't quite clear what the source of the arsenic was. Do you think it was pesticides or just naturally soil occurring?
In this case, natural, natural, yeah.
Another question for you. When you were saying the transects, you had them like, were they in succession from further upland?
They are far out to the river.
Okay. They're parallel, so they're not going from like uplands down to like. Okay, and then you're saying the ratio between the fine and the coarse sand was they like how much erosion has occurred at each transect?
The ratio close to the rivers, we expect to see lower ratio because
okay.
We have more coarse sand than fine sand,
okay.
And farther to the river, we expect to see more fine sand because of the formation of the soil.
Okay.
And what we saw that at the first depth, 0.5, we have kind of a redistribution of the fine sand, so which means we have a soil surface movement.
Okay. So you basically, that's like thermal motion?
Yes.
Okay. I feel like we're talking about the composting. Mm-hmm. So maybe you said this, but I'm still curious when you were saying it. So why do you think when they added the coffee berries that you didn't get the elevated temperature that you got with the coffee berries?
Yeah. One that we're considering, we don't know exactly for sure, but one a potential source of that is that the coffee cherries that we use, they're the dried shell that dehusks the coffee beans, and so they didn't have a lot of moisture, and probably when we were constructing the pile, we didn't moisten the pile long enough. So if we repeated the pile and added more water upon the construction, it may have reached those.
On that, because there's a really big dip in the temperature right there.
Yeah.
What do you think that was?
Could have been that they were not monitoring it, or watering it internally properly, or hard to think. We weren't there.
Yeah.
Well, also the coffee composting. Can you speculate on a different composting technology that would be suitable?
For our particular community, it would the most, the highest thing that would help them use it would be for them to have a more reliable source of manure because they had to go down, bring their tracks to another community, and procure that feedstock, and it was an added expense that they weren't excited about paying.
I think Mike Lindo, he was asking about other alternative
compost
besides static pile, like what were some of the ones that you...
So the main one we looked at was vermicompost, is like the second best one. And we at that research facility that Mr. Solano County and Kura worked at, Majo, they had a neighboring vermicompost facility, and we decided that wasn't applicable because it required the construction of large vermicompost bins, which was an added expense that, since we were exploring if the compost was what they wanted, we didn't want to invest a lot of money into it. And also, for vermicompost, a lot of it is food scraps that go into it. And our community doesn't have a lot of food scraps. They eat it or feed it to their chickens. And then we also didn't want to use some like turn windrows because that's a large mechanical component that's bound for failure.
Well, if no one has any more questions, I guess that we can just wait patiently till the judges come back, and I mean, obviously we can converse, but once they come back, we can announce a winner. Thank you, guys.